It's just about 12 noon, and we've got interviews today on Live and Local for the Sound Celebration Chorus, which is the chapter of Sweet Adeline's based in Springfield. That's female barber shopping. They're giving a concert, a rather interesting program, actually, Saturday evening in Springfield at the Hoagland Performing Arts Center. And tonight at 7:30 at the Doudna Fine Arts Center on the campus of Eastern Illinois University in Charleston, it's a concert called Life in the Groove, The Influence of Jazz, with the EIU Jazz Ensemble and the EIU Wind Symphony, the latter conducted by Barry Hauser, who will be my guest on the first portion of today's show. Hope you'll stay with us for what I hope you will find interesting conversation and music on Live and Local. And my guest on this portion of Live and Local is Barry Hauser, who is the acting director of bands, or I guess interim. What are you being called right now, Barry?
Right now I'm being called the acting director of bands. Our actual director of bands is on leave for this year to Ohio State.
Oh.
And he'll be returning next year. So we're filling in for him in the meantime.
Okay. And you've been at EIU for how long? I didn't finish that in your introduction. Actually, you're acting director of bands at Eastern Illinois University Department of Music in Charleston. So how long have you been there?
This is my third year.
And otherwise, you're associate director, is that the...
That is correct. Associate director and also director of the athletic band. So I take care of the marching band and the basketball band, all those great things.
So how is it leaping into the acting role?
Well, you know, not surprising, it's quite busy while keeping up with the current responsibilities and adding the director band's responsibilities. But the great part about this is being able to conduct the concert tonight in such a fine ensemble as well. So that's been very enjoyable and just a great joy.
The Wind Symphony is the top group at EIU, right?
That is correct.
Yeah. So this is an interesting concept. It seems like the band programs that I've seen tend to have sort of themes to them. This one is called Life in the Groove, The Influence of Jazz, and it's pairing the jazz ensemble led by Sam Fegely and then the Wind Symphony on their respective parts of the program. How did this concept come together?
Well, this is not a new concept here at Eastern. This is something that we started several years ago, and it seemed to take and work very well with our audiences here, because it is a little non-traditional from some of the other band concerts. So it's been working in our favor, so we decided to continue to roll with it. And this year specifically, I think we've really hit it quite on with the influence of jazz as it hits some of the wind band repertory. So we're very excited to put on that concert tonight.
So the concept is that you do a joint one with the jazz ensemble, or that's the influence of jazz as the concept, which is the continuum?
It's a mixture of the two. By joining forces with the jazz ensemble, you know, you automatically get that influence of jazz there for our wind band portion. But our program itself for the Wind Symphony is taking a look at the influences of jazz and what pieces are out there in terms of the wind band rep, and how jazz has influenced some of those things. So that's been a great learning experience for our students who may be a little bit more classically trained. It exposes them to a different genre and medium. And I think it's great for our audience because they get to experience kind of a night in a jazz cafe, and then all of a sudden we switch things over to the concert hall, but still with that jazz cafe flavor.
But the jazz cafe part will still be in the concert hall.
That is correct.
And so it's obvious, you know, when the jazz ensemble is going to be playing, that's music that is jazz. So talk about a little bit about the Wind Symphony pieces, and I mean specific pieces, and how jazz shows up in those pieces.
Yeah, well, our opener is Scootin' on Hard Rock, and that's by David Holsinger. And basically, Scootin' on Hard Rock is just a mixture of three short, scat, jazzy dances, and takes a lot of the jazz rhythms and jazz mediums that take place in typical jazz, and we put it in the wind band setting. It's a very catchy opener, not necessarily just ear candy, but a great learning experience from the technical side for our students to learn about the jazz articulations and kind of take a journey through this hard rock road that's actually exists in Texas. The second number, Blackbird, is a piece by Paul McCartney and John Lennon, and Shelley Berg, a very famous jazz pianist, and his trio put this composition together, this arrangement, and they added wind band parts to it. So we're going to have our faculty jazz pianist join us along with two students. So it'll be wind symphony plus jazz trio. So obviously those elements of the jazz trio is going to heavily influence what's going on with Blackbird. And then the final number is Niagara Falls by Michael Dougherty. And just the nature of his writing and his composition style brings in a lot of different elements from some of the colorful chords that take place in jazz. You know, we're not just talking about major and minor chords. We're getting in some of the sevenths and some of the ninths and things like that that just really add some great tone colors to the wind band setting.
So you mostly talked about chord structure in the Niagara Falls and the rhythms in the Holsinger piece especially. Are there other aspects of jazz that show up?
Well, in the wind band setting for this particular program, you know, when we get to some of the improv portions, there are some improvisation moments in Blackbird, and that's even formulated not just in the trio, but the wind band. So that's been something that's been a very important aspect of where our students, their learning abilities going into the jazz style, especially if they're not jazz trained and taking jazz studies here. As I spoke about the classically trained, a lot of times we don't work a lot on improv. So this has been an element of some aleatoric elements of the actual Blackbird you hear open up in the flutes for the beginning of Blackbird before the jazz trio kicks in. So there are some other elements. But when we go to the true jazz medium, there's a lot of things that we're still having to build upon. And I think that's something that is an engaging thing to think about and maybe push composers of wind band music even further to take a look at those elements.
We're talking with Barry Hauser, who is conducting the Eastern Illinois University Wind Symphony tonight on a concert with the EIU Jazz Ensemble, led by Sam Fagley, a concert called Life in the Groove, The Influence of Jazz. That's at 7:30 tonight at the Dowdna Fine Arts Center. And here is one of the pieces that he was just talking about. It's music by Michael Dougherty called Niagara Falls. Here's the North Texas Wind Symphony, led by Eugene Corporon, on Live and Local. Sounds to me like the percussion section's going to have a workout in that music by Michael Dougherty called Niagara Falls, not to mention all the rest of the players. We heard the North Texas Wind Symphony, conducted by Eugene Corporon, in that performance here on Live and Local on FM 90.9, and you can hear that work performed live tonight at 7:30 by the Eastern Illinois University Wind Symphony, conducted by Barry L. Hauser. That's part of a program that's celebrating the influence of jazz. In fact, it's called Life in the Groove, The Influence of Jazz, with the EIU Jazz Ensemble also on that concert. And let's continue my conversation with Barry Hauser about that program here on Live and Local. Do you have a background in jazz yourself?
Well, I've taught in the public schools, so I had several jazz programs that I've led. Growing up in my music studies, I did participate in our jazz ensembles as well. I don't want to exactly say I'm a true jazzer by any means, but enough to get by and definitely teach our students, definitely. So that's been an interesting aspect to the teaching portion.
And what is or was your instrument or instruments?
Instrument is trumpet.
So you're still active as a player?
Still active as a player as much as I can.
Where do you stay active as a player?
Well, we've got a variety of ensembles here on campus open to our faculty and staff, so once in a while I participate there. I've got a recital that's coming up, a student recital, and we're doing a trumpet ensemble piece, so I'm going to play there as well.
And I imagine it's a pretty cool thing for the students to play next to faculty performers.
Yeah, we like to think so. I think it is. They seem pretty excited about it, so it should be interesting.
How many bands are in the program at Eastern?
We have the Wind Symphony, the top band, as we're talking about today. We have a concert band, which is an audition group, our second group for music majors and some non-majors. And then we have a university band, which is our campus band, and that's open to anybody across campus, faculty and staff as well. And then we have the Panther Marching Band and the Panther Basketball Band. So we have a total of five bands here in our program.
So do you normally lead the other two bands, the other two concert bands?
That's correct.
And what have you found different working with this one compared to what you've been doing for the last couple of years?
Yeah. A lot of our students in the concert band are truly music education majors and maybe not at the top of their game yet. They may be freshmen or sophomores in their academic studies. So we're really not necessarily teaching musical components and concepts, but we're teaching how to teach those. So when they leave here, they're going to know exactly what to do when they get a band program of their own. Whereas the Wind Symphony, we look at it as more performance-oriented ensemble. So we don't talk so much about the teaching elements as we do about performance elements to perfect our, you know, our overall performance.
I'm just curious with when you say you talk about how to teach band, so to speak.
Yeah.
Can you give me an example of how you would go, how a rehearsal element might be different when you take one approach versus the other?
Yeah, absolutely. As we maybe stop in a rehearsal sequence and we talk about a musical concept, let's talk specifically about rhythm, and it's something that the ensemble may be struggling with, posing a very open-ended question of, okay, if you were Mr. or Mrs. Band Director at this point, what are we going to do in this exact situation? So not only are we addressing how to actually play the rhythm, you know, teaching it by rote, that's not what we want to do with our students. We want to try and break it down and teach some components. So we're thinking, having them think a little bit more systematically about how to play the rhythm, but then also how are you going to teach students to play that rhythm as well? So you kind of get a more of a two-sided answer and process with the concert band versus Wind Symphony. You know, we're not teaching rhythms, first of all. We're just perfecting clarity and articulations and length of note, tone, things along those lines.
So in the case of the music ed students, it's a little more of a dialogue at times?
Correct. Yeah. We have quite a few conversations about things, and thankfully the nature of that ensemble, our performance schedule is not as fast and demanding as the Wind Symphony. Wind Symphony, we usually turn a program around every 12 to 15 rehearsals, whereas the concert band, they typically build up to 20, 25.
So they probably do, what, a concert a semester?
Yeah, a concert or two, depending on the semester scheduling.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like a fun program and some great music on it that some people will recognize, and it looks like a lot that people won't. I see you have at least one composition here by a faculty member, a retired faculty member from Alan Horney for the jazz and the jazz ensemble.
Yes, that's correct.
And he led the jazz ensemble for a long time,
didn't he? He did for quite a long time and just recently retired. So it's going to be great to have a piece played by him. And he's obviously a very important part of our jazz program here and also the marching program because he did a lot of arrangements for the marching band as well.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay. That's Alan Horney's Yorktown Groove. It's part of the first part of tonight's concert with the Eastern Illinois University Jazz Ensemble. Sam Fagley is now the director there. And we're talking with Barry Hauser, who is conducting the Wind Symphony at Eastern. That's going to be the second part of the program. The whole show is called Life in the Groove, the Influence of Jazz. It starts at 7:30 tonight in the Dvorak Concert Hall of the Doudna Fine Arts Center on the Eastern campus in Charleston. And Barry, I thank you for joining us on the show.
Thank you, Kevin, very much. Thank you.
That was a tune called After You've Gone by Henry Creamer and Turner Layton. You'll be hearing that performance was by members of the London Sinfonietta, conducted by Simon Rattle. And you can hear that tune played by the Eastern Illinois University Jazz Ensemble, led by Sam Fagley, on tonight's concert with the EIU Wind Symphony at 7:30 at the Doudna Fine Arts Center on the Eastern Campus in Charleston. This is Live and Local on FM 90.9.
Help support the services you rely on, accurate news and engaging music, by building a member match fund. Your gift of $25, $50, or $75 to the fund adds excitement and value to the upcoming pledge drive and helps keep it short. Mail your check to WILL Radio, 300 North Goodwin, Urbana, 61801, or give online at willpledge.org.
And programs on WILL-FM are made possible in part by Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, inviting you to visit the Promenade Gift Shop for unique gift ideas. More information on upcoming events is at krannertcenter.com.
Come hear the
bass.
Give them a hand.
Listen to that Dixie band.
Listen to that Dixie band.
Listen to that Dixie band.
That was the Max Factor Quartet, which took third place at this year's 2010 International Competition of Sweet Adelines. Listen to that Dixie band. My guest on this portion of Live and Local is Sue Baker, who is the business manager for the Sound Celebration Chorus, based in Springfield. It's a Sweet Adelines chorus, which means that it's barbershop chorus of all female singers. And I think we've only had one such conversation on this show since Live and Local has been around. We've had a couple of male barbershop quartets on. And we did have one, a female barbershop quartet, to talk about the Champaign-Urbana Chorus, but it's our first connection here with the Springfield Chorus. And I'm pleased that I found you in the nick of time, because you guys have a concert that sounds rather interesting tomorrow night in Springfield.
Yes, not tomorrow night, Saturday evening.
Right.
But yes, it's going to be a lot of fun. It's called Murder in the Wings, and it's the first time that we've done a murder mystery with songs, of course, interspersed as clues to the murder mystery. We have six area actors that are involved with the show with us, as well as the chorus, two chorus ensembles, a chorus quartet, and our director's quartet, which is a four-time regional winner, main attraction, that will also be a main attraction to our show. And we have a group of actors, I guess you would call them, from the Boo Crew in Rochester, the Lions Club, that they're going to be creatures that are going to greet people from our audience as they arrive outside the Hoagland.
The Boo Crew.
The Boo Crew, that's what they call themselves, yes.
Oh, they specialize in Halloween scariness or something?
Well, somewhat, but they put it on low scare for greeting our audience, and people have just been delighted with them. We've worked with them one other time, and they're just a wonderful group of people. And their costumes are no named characters, but they are reminiscent of characters you've seen in various kinds of venues, and they're just wonderful to work with. And one I've seen before, they have a family group that is all dressed as if they were from the Civil War era.
How many shows does the chorus do a year?
Well, this is our only annual show, a fundraiser, but we are a very active performers, and as business manager, I can attest to that. And we tend to average 2 to 4 performances a month.
So those are for what kinds of places?
They can be for retirement homes. They can be for private events, Christmas, you know, parties, or some civic organizations. We do a number of things that we do for the community. For instance, we yearly appear at the Festival of Trees, which is benefiting Memorial Hospital, and that runs always the week before Thanksgiving. So we're always a part of that. We always do. The American Legion's pilgrimage at Lincoln's Tomb, where the featured singers there have been for 30-plus years.
So it's a mixture of things, but we do keep active. We're not able to take everything that we're asked for, but we do as many as we possibly can. And coming up the end of October, we're going to be over in Charleston at Eastern Illinois University. It's called Youth in Harmony, and our director and other people in the chorus are going to be working with young men and women of high school age, teaching them a couple of songs each, and then they will perform for each other in the evening, and then our chorus will join in and perform four songs from our show, and wearing what we call our zombie get-ups, because the show opens with Thriller, and we do look like zombies. So it's kind of a kickoff to the holiday or Halloween season, in a sense, being October 2nd, too.
So that performance you mentioned at Eastern is when? What's the date for that?
That is on Monday, October 25th, and it is free and open to the public there too.
Great. So you said that the murder mystery is your first time doing that.
A murder mystery, yes.
But does your show typically have a theatrical element to it?
Yes, and usually it is locally written. So if several of our members worked on constructing it, and we do that typically, but every year is something a little different. A couple of years ago, we did a Halloween show, and so there's always, yes, a theatrical element, which we think adds to the fun. And in this case, people in the audience at the intermission are going to be able to vote and say who they think did the crime, who murdered the individual, and why they did it. And then there's some fun little prizes available also for those people, the first to tell the correct answer.
When I saw the listing initially, I was on the Hoagland Center for the Performing Arts website for some reason, and it wasn't because I knew about your show. And then I saw this Murder in the Wings, and I thought, oh, that, you know, that's probably some acting group. And then I saw that it was the Sounds of Celebration Chorus, and then I wondered, oh, who are they? And then I went to your website because all the links are nicely set up there. But then I wondered, well, how many murder songs are there in Barbershop Harmony?
Well, the songs are not exactly about murder per se, but they link the story as the story progresses of why this murder occurred, that sort of thing. And so there's actually no murder songs involved. But as I said, Thriller opens the evening, Michael Jackson's Thriller, complete with choreography. The ballet mistress of the Springfield Ballet Company has recently married into the Barbershop family, so to speak. She has married the son of our current president, and so she choreographed it for us. And then one ensemble will sing Love Potion Number 9. But a number of the other songs that we're doing, like Miley Cyrus's The Climb and Carole King's I Feel the Earth Move Under My Feet, are not murder songs or Halloween songs, but they help move the storyline along.
Well, and how much of they don't sound like traditional barbershop songs
No,
either.
They're not. and you're right. We are a preservationist society in the sense that we are preserving four-part a cappella harmony for women, but we don't have to adhere to certain courting structure that we would have to, that we do for our annual competition. For that, we sing more traditional songs because the courting has to be there for being judged. But we like to push the envelope and have a much broader variety of songs because that's what our audience wants to hear, too.
Does the group do your own arrangements, or are these arrangements you other people
do? I could say that we had arrangers or arrangers within our group. We don't at this time, but they're arranged by other women who sing with Sweet Adelines throughout the country, so we can access, you know, those arrangements and purchase them.
What's the size of this chorus?
Right now, we're at 38 members. We're very proud to say we've added 12 new members in this last little over a year's time. So we're rather excited because we're moving into the next category. We've been a small chorus for a number of years, and this one would move us into the mid-sized chorus. And the only time that makes any difference is when we are at competition. But our friends from the Champaign-Urbana Chorus and the Danville Chorus are other small choruses in the area, and we kind of take turns, so to speak, placing first in our category. So we're very pleased for Champaign-Urbana. They took first place small chorus this last competition, and they were so excited and pleased, and they should have been. And we had been the previous year, and so, you know, it's a very close kind of friendship and competition, but, you know, it's wonderful to have other people that enjoy the same kind of music as we do.
Well, it's nice of everyone to share first place
It really is, yes. So, but we are a group of about 38 voices at this particular time.
So of the 12 people that you just added, what's the age range, out of curiosity?
Oh, now see, people don't have to tell their age as they join. I'd say that probably our youngest people are probably in their mid to late 30s. And the upper level, you know, I'm only guessing, but I know there are people probably well over 65. So singing does keep you young.
Well, I asked the question not because I really wanted to know how old anyone was specifically, but because at least with male barbershop choruses, it's been a problem, at least with smaller choruses over the years, that the age has gotten so old that the choruses just, I mean, literally die out. And I wondered how that's happening with you guys.
That's always a concern. And we've had younger members from time to time. We had a couple of high school members, and over the years we've had, you know, but they always have to have a sponsor, usually within the chorus, a mother or an aunt or, you know, something like that. But then their lives get busy when they, you know, go on to school or that sort of thing, and so it's problematic. But there's no age limitation. We would take in younger members. It just, they have to realize kind of what is involved. It's a major commitment and a major hobby, you know, for people. And I think they enjoy it. In fact, they're very young people that have been very active at the regional level, and were one of the winners in the quartet contest this year. I didn't ask them, but they seemed to me young women that were probably in their 20s.
Oh, that's terrific.
So many people that join, their families, their mother or their grandmother or their dad or whomever has sung in this style of music, and they've heard it or grown up learning that part, thinking, you know, that their mom sings baritone, it's the only part they've ever heard, you know, so they can easily step into it. And they're right there ready to take on the choreography challenges that some of us that have been around a while, it's not brand new to us, but doing as much as is currently typical is not something we were accustomed to. We're more like swing choirs these days, and that's partly because of people are exposed to. That's what young women are exposed to, you know, when they're in school. And so then going from that to this would be, you know, an easy transition.
Well, I wondered whether doing songs like Thriller and whatnot, more popular songs, as opposed to the traditional barbershop, might actually be helping in recruiting younger people.
I feel that it is. I feel that makes us more appealing. And I'm sure there are those I've heard that will hear us and, you know, yearn for the old days of hearing all traditional, but you have to live in the present times, you know. And we are very much aware, you know, that our audience wants, they want to hear a variety. And I was just going to say, we also, I don't know if you're aware that the stagecoach stop of Clayville, which has kind of been not up and running for a number of years, is coming back, and they had their first spring festival in many a year, and a number of groups, including our group, volunteered our entertainment for them in order to help get them kind of back up and running, and it's really great to see community things like that offered, and so we like to support things like that as well.
And since you've mentioned it, tell me a little bit more about what that is. I did not know anything about that.
It's a stagecoach stop from the mid-1800s, and it is west of Springfield, several miles, headed towards Pleasant Plains. And it's just a delightful sight, and the town of Pleasant Plains has purchased it and has taken on the task of, first of all, cleaning the grounds and then renovating the building and getting it back to what it was like in its heyday, which was in the, I would say, probably the 70s and 80s. Typically, they would have several events a year, and people just flocked there because for everything of that kind of that era, and that's coming back now. They're having craftspeople and musical entertainment, and so ours being an entertainment that is unaccompanied is very portable, but it's also something typical of that time, that people would sing without necessarily musical accompaniment.
This is a conversation with Sue Baker of the Sound Celebration Chorus in Springfield, a chapter of Sweet Adelines, who are giving their fall concert on Saturday at 6:30. Doors open at 6 o'clock at the Hoagland Fine Arts Center in Springfield. They're calling the program actually a murder mystery, so it's music and theatrics. Here's some music by the International Champion Chorus just from this year, 2010. It's the Rich Tone Chorus, and it's the song A Nightingale Sang in Berkeley Square. You've mentioned choreography a couple of times, including that you have a ballet person choreographing this particular show. How does that stretch your legs?
Well, we're not. I would not call what we're doing ballet moves. She has a very varied background. So, but it very much moves the music along because the moves so well. You know, all the counting and rhythm and everything goes so perfectly with the music. It actually is an enhancement once you get past the learning, you know, so many moves to go with the music. So it's amazingly good. And we have learned from a CD because obviously we couldn't have her with us all the time. So she performed it with her back to us, and then we mirrored her, you know, her movements.
On the DVD.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And since I'm talking about that in modern technology, in the last, I'd say maybe 3 years, we still have music committee people that will present when we learn new music, but there's a learning CD burned for us. And we have our part on there plus the other parts and then plus all the parts together. So as you master your music, then you can use your track to begin, and then you can go to, for instance, I sing lead, and if I know that I know my music, when I can sing my part against the baritone part, which is a very unpredictable part, I guess is a good way to characterize baritone.
Well, I was looking at your website here, and there it describes the baritone as the glue between the lead and the bass parts, lead being usually the melody,
mm-hmm.
and of course bass being the low part.
The low harmony, and then of course tenor being the high harmony. But it's the combination of all of them that makes the sound, and as our director has said, there's as many as, once you get the right chord, there's as many as 6 tones sometimes in any particular chord, which is more than the sum of the parts, as it were, because of overtone and undertone.
So that's what you call ringing the chord.
And ringing the chord, that is exactly right. We try to do that as often as possible.
And it won't ring, and you won't hear those overtones if it's not in tune.
That's right. And that's one of the big challenges of singing a cappella. Sometimes people who, you know, admire what we do think that it's easier to do than it is. It does require regular practice and being very attuned and aware of the other parts and you know, what you're singing with, because we sing in a mixed arrangement. We're not necessarily standing next to people singing the same voice part.
So how long have you been at this personally?
Well, since you asked, this spring will be 40 years for me.
Wow. And what appeals to you about barbershop singing?
It's just wonderful. It resonates because it is a cappella. It resonates, I always say, in your bones, actually, to stand in the midst of people and sing it correctly and well. It just vibrates in your bones. But then the entire organization is a wonderful educational organization, not just musically, but in other leadership roles, that sort of thing, for women, and wonderful camaraderie and friendships that, you know, are formed over the years as well, not just within our own chapter, but the other people that we meet as we, you know, see them at competition and elsewhere as well.
Talk a little bit more about the Saturday's event besides the murder mystery part of it. What else will go on?
Well, like I said, the murder mystery is intertwined with our music, and then we will sing every so often in that portion of the evening. Then at the intermission time, when people can vote for who they thought committed the crime, then we come back, and that will have a chorus quartet, and then our director's award-winning quartet will perform. Pardon me, and then we will come back on stage and do a concert portion, which will be pretty typically what we would wear at a competition, our kind of our glitz and glam kind of a look.
So you'll be out of your thriller coat.
Yeah, so that people can see that we're still fine, and that will pretty much wrap up the evening. And then when we do that, that will end our evening. So it's a full evening, and people are well entertained. And it is considered, we consider it family entertainment. So if children are up that late or, like music, they would enjoy it just as well as adults would.
And it starts at 6:30 on Saturday, doors opening at 6 o'clock.
Yes, and it is open seating. So the box office will be open, and some people, of course, have purchased their tickets ahead. Just to know, in order to sit on the main floor, if that's what people would desire to do, they want to be there, pretty early on. I want to also mention we kind of touched on new members and gaining new members and everything. We're always looking for a few more good singers, but we have guest nights every so often, typically the first Monday, and our next guest night is Monday, November 1st. They're at the Hoagland at 7 o'clock.
Your rehearsal really goes from 7 to 10?
Yes, it does.
that's a long rehearsal.
It is. Well, we mix it up. We do vocal and physical warm-ups, and then we work on, particular pieces, that new things we might be working on. Then if we have a performance coming up, we run through that performance. And then the end of the evening might include, announcements or updates on certain kinds of things that people need to know. So it's a variety of activities, and then often we split off into the sections and work on our particular part, and then sometimes we'll combine two of the sections. That's when we're making progressing from learning it to being able to maintain it with somebody else singing in your ear.
And in order to join the chorus at the guest nights or on Monday nights, no audition is required, but to actually sing with the chorus in a performance setting, then you have to audition? Did I read your site correctly?
Yes, I was going to say anyone can visit, and people typically visit for several times before they decide to audition. It's not an open audition. I mean, they don't audition in front of the entire group or anything like that. It's a private. But they do need to audition, and they need to be able to pass that audition, and then they're recommended for membership.
And if you're not sure what part you sing, then you get to sing for the director, and she'll tell you.
She does kind of a voicing, but sometimes, people try out a couple different parts before they land, where they feel most comfortable. And we understand some people can sing more than one part, so they, have their choice. And some people sing one part in the chorus and a different part in a quartet, for instance. And so, it's really nice to have people that are capable of doing that as well.
Yeah, if you can remember all those parts.
Exactly.
Well, why not? Well, it sounds like both a lot of fun that you all have at your just routinely, but also Saturday's performance sounds like a great deal of fun.
We think so, yeah. And this is our 57th year. Now, none of us currently performing have been in 57 years, but the time is coming where that would be possible because young women are joining at a younger age.
And hopefully sticking it out.
And staying with it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's right.
Well, my guest is Sue Baker. She's business manager for the Sound Celebration Chorus in Springfield. They're giving their annual show Saturday evening at 6:30. 6 o'clock is the door open time, and it's at the Hoagland Center for the Arts on South 6th Street in Springfield, near the state capitol, the new state capitol, that is. And if somebody wants tickets, they just at this point probably just show up at the door, I guess.
Yes, and we're at the Hoagland Center for the Arts. It's 420 South 6th Street, and the box office number is 523-2787. But they'll be open early before the show that evening. And then, Kevin, are you going to mention that we have a couple of tickets too?
We will give away some tickets.
Okay, all right. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Sue, for coming on the show.
You're welcome. I enjoyed it.
And I'll give those tickets away to the second caller at the number I'll give you in just a second. But don't call until you hear the Writer's Almanac with Garrison Keillor at 101. I won't pick up the phone till then. The number is area 217-244-2628. That's 217-244-2628. The second caller at that number once the Writer's Almanac begins. You're listening to Illinois Public Media, 90.9 WYLFM and HD1 and HD2 Urbana with translators W266 AF Urbana and W293 AF Danville. Our programs are made possible with support from World Harvest International and Gourmet Foods on the corner of 6th and University in Champaign, providing Champaign-Urbana with a wide array of foods from around the world, including cheeses, olives, spices, hot sauces, olive oils, and more. World Harvest invites you to join them in supporting public radio. And we have support from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine, Urbana, with wines, beers, and spirits for the serious collector to the first-time buyer. Wine tastings are held on Saturdays from noon to 4 in the Bouvon's Tasting Room. More information is at the Corkscrew.com. Sunny this afternoon, high around 72, partly cloudy tonight, low near 48, and partly sunny and cooler tomorrow with a high around 62, currently 70 degrees. Join us again for Live and Local on Monday from 12 to 1, and it is the Writer's Almanac coming up at 101 with classical music at 106. I'm Kevin Kelly. Have a great weekend.
What else could I do but keep repeating through again, I love you, love you. I can still recall the thrill, and I guess I always will. I hope it never departs, departs. Dear, with your lips to mine, I hear a song divine. Sing with the strings of my heart.